Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Pellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's great having you join me today for another wonderful show exploring topics in great detail that have immense relevance to you and your loved ones. So, as always, this is an opportunity to get empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. Let's see, I want to be sure that everyone is aware of my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and my Facebook page, which is the same name, What Women Must Know, because I've been emailing you through my list some great information. Not only do I do regular postings on my Facebook, sometimes two or three or four times a day, depending how inspired I am with information, but I also have been sending out emails about some of the upcoming events that I am involved with and the conferences that I am participating in. Some of them are cancer conferences. Some of them are events that will be happening in Australia and special classes and programs that I'm putting together. So if you really want to know all the things that are going on in my universe that may be intersecting with your universe, please go to whatwomenmustknow.com. Get on my list. You'll get some wonderful free reports anyway, just by signing up. So you will continue to educate yourself just by having access to the special reports that are free. And, of course, I have many articles that are freely available. You can access previous radio shows and just stay on top of all that's going on. And I'd love to have you join me. So, whatwomenmustknow.com. And let's talk about our topic today. You know, in February, those of you who've been listening, we dedicated the entire month to wholehearted heart health series. So it was exploring the many facets related to what really is needed and what really is the truth regarding our health, our heart health, cardiovascular health. Well, there's so much to be said. I've kind of continued with that topic, and today we're going to be exploring another facet of this issue of healthy, wholehearted health month series with my guest, who is Dr. Johnny Bowden. He is the author of a fantastic book called The Great Cholesterol Myth, Why Lowering Your Cholesterol Won't Prevent Heart Disease, and a little bit more about Dr. Bowden. He is a nationally known expert on weight loss, nutrition, and health. He is a board-certified nutritionist with a master's degree in psychology and the author of 14 books on health, healing, food, and longevity, including two bestsellers, The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth and Living Low Carb. A frequent guest on television and radio, he has appeared on Fox News, CNN, SNBC, ABC, NBC, and CBS as an expert on nutrition, weight loss, and longevity. Is a past member of the editorial advisory board of Men's Health magazine, is the nutrition editor for Pilates Style, and is a regular contributor to AOL, Vanity Fair Online, Clean Eating Magazine, Better Nutrition, and Total Health Magazine Online. So, as you can tell, he has a lot to say and is highly respected in his field, and it's just wonderful that we have him with us today on the show. So, hello and welcome, Dr. Johnny Bowden.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's been a long time since you've been
it
on
has.
My show. It's always been fun. I love having our conversations, and I just missed you at Expo West, actually, so that was a disappointment, but I have you here.
I'm sorry. I was everywhere.
I know. Well, that was the problem. We all were everywhere, but we didn't collide. But, you know, I've got you here, so it's wonderful. You know, you starred, and for all my Down Under listeners, and I have quite a few people down in Australia who listen to my show, you were one of the stars of this actually very profound two-part series done on Catalyst TV, which is kind of a really great show, investigative journalism, I guess you would say. And so it was a two-part series, which is really unusual for Catalyst to do a two-part series, which I watch when I'm down there. And it was like setting the cat amongst the pigeons. You were out there really debunking the cholesterol myth, and you, along with Dr. Steven Sinatra, and there were many other people who are, you know, really spoken here in the U.S. about the myth, and you set. So I don't know if you were aware of the effects of that show, but you
did.
Oh, my
God. You bet I was.
Oh, you know, I couldn't believe that they actually had you on television. They dedicated two entire shows, which, by the way, I posted on my Facebook page. The two episodes have been, in fact, I think I posted them twice, two different times on my Facebook page, because they are just phenomenal. It was just phenomenal information. It was like, oh my gosh, truth really getting out there into mainstream Australia. It was awesome. So
the producers of that show really experienced a tremendous amount of flack, and there was a concerted letter writing campaign, and the powers that be really attacked the station, the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Company, Catalyst, the wonderful journalist who put that together, Marianne Demasi, who by the way is a PhD in medical journalism. And yet they attacked her credentials. They accused us of having an agenda, of being in the pocket of the, I mean, they came up with conspiracy theories. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And all that said, they really only got about 23 major complaints, 23 letter writing complaints, but it was enough to really cause quite a storm. They got the Australian Prime Minister involved, tried to stop the showing of the of the two-part series, planted articles saying that thousands of people will die because of this advice, because they're going to throw away their statin drugs and immediately die. You know, so it was really a pretty remarkable situation, and not one that is totally surprising, considering the power of this lobby and the strength of this cultural meme that, you know, cholesterol causes heart disease and we should all avoid saturated fat and they should put statins in the water supply. I mean, this is a very, very strong current of thinking. It's way past its expiration date. It does a great deal of damage. It conveys a very false message about heart disease, and it makes us take our eyes off the ball of what really does matter in preventing heart disease, which are things that we can actually do something about. You know, one of my professors, the late great nutritionist Robert Crayon, used to say, you know, depression is not a Prozac deficiency, heart disease is not a Lipitor deficiency, you know. So yet that is really what a lot of people actually think about heart disease, that, you know, if you can just control your cholesterol with this magic medication, statin drugs, everything's going to be fine. And the data is very clear that that's just not true. One half or more of people who are admitted to hospitals for cardiovascular problems, or for even in another study for cardiovascular surgery, have absolutely normal cholesterol levels. Cholesterol doesn't predict heart disease very well, and concentrating all of our public education capital, if you will, on lowering cholesterol, this important molecule which is so valuable for our brains and for our immune system and for our general health, to concentrate all of our political capital, our educational capital, our public policy capital on getting people to take statin drugs and lower their cholesterol in the hopes that that's going to lower heart disease is just very, very ill-advised, and it's time for a radical revision of that way of thinking.
So I like to say it's a furphy.
It's a what?
It's a furphy. I love that word. Do you know that word, furphy?
No.
It's totally, it's an illusion. You know, we're going down the wrong track. It's a total mistake.
It is going
mistake,
down the wrong
you know?
Track.
And that's maybe what we can do in the time we have together. We'll kind of segment this conversation. We have lots of things we want to talk about.
Okay.
First of all, let's talk about why it is a great myth. Let's start there. And then Johnny, then I want to go on and give people some practical strategies of what they really need to know, what kind of supplements they need to be taking, what kind of lifestyle changes have proven to be effective, and then the kinds of tests they really need to look at. So how does that sound like a program?
That sounds just absolutely fantastic. How much time do we have?
We have an entire hour.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. We can cover a lot of ground.
Good. That's my
Where shall we start?
Well, let's start by let's go back to the basics. What's the myth? What's the cholesterol myth that we've all been brought up with? What's the cholesterol myth that you were such a heretic when you did that Catalyst program in Australia, debunking the cholesterol myth that You even got the prime minister. Your message even got the prime minister involved. Which did he actually do anything to?
No.
Okay.
No, but they really did try to stop that show from being shown.
Yeah. So
they,
obviously
they threatened lawsuits. I mean, it was remarkable. I mean, remember, this is supposed to be science. This is supposed to be freedom of information. This is supposed to be about getting, you know, accurate, scientifically validated information to the largest number of people. There should never be book burning, the equivalent of book burning, when you're talking about people's health. I mean, people should be able to be exposed to, you know, to conflicting theories and to lots of information so that they can actually make up their minds about things. And, you know, the idea that you should suppress a point of view because it harms the powers that be or upsets the status quo seems to me to just be anti-science in general.
Well, obviously, you know your message was hitting a raw nerve if you had that kind of response. You were really challenging at the very core of an industry, not really a treatment, an industry,
yeah,
that is making billions off of a myth. So,
yeah,
okay.
And
so,
I think it's important also to clarify a couple of things. We are not, here's the first thing. Your average doctor who follows procedure, and, you know, you're in his office, his or her office for 7 minutes, and they see your cholesterol number, and they reach for the prescription pad. They're not bad guys. These aren't bad guys. They're overworked. They're underpaid. They have very little time with patients. They're part of a machine, a system, you know, that is based on prescribing pharmaceuticals, and basically, they don't even have time to read the research themselves. So they are basically fed information by very perky, attractive pharmaceutical reps who come to their office and show them, you know, give them samples and show them data. And it's very convincing. And a lot of studies have shown that, you know, this is where most doctors get their information from. If they're lucky, they read the abstracts in a couple of journals. But they're not really keeping up with all of this stuff, and they don't have access to it. So they're doing the best that they can, but they're just as badly misinformed as the rest of us. And you know, where everything breaks down is that we have come to believe that doctors have this kind of direct line to God, so to speak. You know, that if a doctor says it, it's definitely got to be true. But study after study has shown that doctors are among the most naive consumers of marketing. They can be marketed to by these pharmaceutical companies, and they never know it. There have been study after study showing that if you ask doctors, is all that marketing, does that have any influence on your prescribing behavior? Every one of them says, no, it doesn't. They say, well, those perky pharmaceutical reps come to your office and give you samples and bring lunch and show you all that. Does that have any influence? And every one of them says no, and then the studies show that it has a significant influence on prescribing behavior. So, in a way, doctors are as bad as kids. They don't even know they're being marketed to. And that's part of the whole danger of the system.
Okay. So what, I guess, what, you know, why do you call it a cholesterol myth, Johnny? Let's go back to some of those basics, and
sure,
and then we can move from there, because
sure,
we've been so brainwashed into this cholesterol story that we really need to be reminded over and over again it's a myth.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. What we call the great cholesterol myth is really a series or a connected series of myths and hypotheses. The first is that cholesterol causes heart disease. The second is that cholesterol predicts heart disease very well. The third is that saturated fat should be taken out of the diet because it raises cholesterol and therefore, you know, it sets you on the way towards heart disease. So it's really a kind of series of myths that kind of are all interrelated. And, you know, Cheryl, the way I got into this, I started life, you know, in this field in 1990 as a personal trainer. And, you know, as most personal trainers, most of our clients were there to lose weight, to get their bodies into shape. And I started at a time when low-fat diets and aerobic exercise were all the tools we had. That was what we were taught. People who were obese because clearly they ate too many calories and they didn't get on the treadmill enough. And this is, of course, another one of the most destructive myths in medicine. And it's completely past its expiration date, and it's completely false. But most people still believe that, that people are fat because they eat too many calories and they don't exercise enough. So we used the tools that we thought were effective, the low-fat diet, aerobic exercise, you know, just get off your duff and move around more and just eat less, and, you know, and that will take care of it. But except it doesn't. It doesn't take care of it. And we would see many, many people who were doing exactly what we tell them to do. They were getting on that treadmill. They were putting in that joyless hour. You see them at the gym just huffing and puffing, staring at the TV set on their Stairmasters, hoping that hour will go away, and nothing really happens to their body. They're eating this low-fat diet. They're hungry all the time. They're not getting the results. And we saw this time and time again, and it kind of defied what we had been taught. Now, I started in the field around 1990. Very shortly after that, the Atkins diet kind of experienced a kind of renaissance. It first came out in 1972. There were several different versions of it. But in the early 90s, there was an updated version of it. And many people, in frustration with the low-fat eating programs that were being recommended, were going on this Atkins diet. Now, I, as a trainer, very much steeped in the mythology of the times, was mortified when I'd have people tell me they were going on Atkins. I believed, like everybody else, I said, well, this is a heart attack waiting to happen. Maybe you'll lose a few pounds, sure, but your cholesterol is going to go through the roof, and you're going to die, and you're going to have a heart attack, and this is just terrible. Except that's not what happened. And client after client would come back. Not only had they lost weight, but their blood tests were better. And their triglycerides had gone down. And their cholesterol may or may not have gone up, but their HDL was higher, and their triglycerides were lower, and they had measures of inflammation that had gone down, and they were lower blood pressure. And this was in defiance of everything we had been taught. So it caused me to kind of wonder whether or not, you know, these fats that we were told to avoid, were they really that bad? Maybe they weren't. Because it seemed like people were losing weight when they were eating higher fat diets. And I don't know, maybe it was time to reexamine some of this stuff. So I began looking at some of this stuff and digging into it a little bit deeper. And as a nutritionist, when I then went on to become a nutritionist in the mid-90s, and to become board certified, I would often recommend to clients a higher fat diet, and I would bump heads with their doctors, who would say, this is crazy. Because remember, they were barely on board with what we now all think of as healthy fats, like monounsaturated fat and olive oil. They were barely getting the message on that, let alone, my God, saturated fat, butter, lard, oh my God, coconut oil. These things were considered the spawn of Satan. So, you know, we began to wonder whether or not this was quite as true as it was, and I started really digging into this research, and I found that it's right there in the data, and it's right, you know, if you have eyes to see it, there it is. It cholesterol doesn't predict heart disease very well. And then, to compound the myth, we're not even measuring cholesterol right. You know, in about 1960, if you went to a health fair, and you had your cholesterol measured. They do a little thumb prick, and they get the blood, and they say, Mrs. Jones, your cholesterol is about 240, or it's 190, or it's 210. They give you a single number. Around the early 60s, we started paying attention to the way cholesterol traveled in the bloodstream, and we found, okay, well, we know it travels in these two classes of packages, these HDL, these high-density lipoproteins, and these LDLs, these low-density lipoproteins, and they appear to be a little bit different, behave differently in the body, so we gave the name good cholesterol to HDL and bad cholesterol to LDL, and that was an improvement over just having the single number. Now we knew that, you know, there's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol, well, that's an improvement, but it's way, way past its expiration date. We now know that there are three or four different kinds of HDL. There's HDL2, there's HDL2A, there's four or five different kinds of LDL, there's LDL-A, LDL-B. These all behave quite differently in the body. So we now know, for example, that LDL-A is a kind of harmless molecule. It looks like a cotton ball. It doesn't do any damage. It's a big, you know, cottony, fluffy particle that doesn't really do anything. LDL-B, on the other hand, looks like a little BB gun. It's a very inflamed, my co-writer Steve Sinatra calls it an angry molecule. That's very atherogenic. Well, We're not looking at LDL-A versus LDL-B or HDL-2 versus HDL-3. We're just doing that same old good and bad cholesterol, and we are obscuring some of the real benefits of things like saturated fat, because saturated fat actually increases your LDL-A, the harmless kind, decreases your LDL-B, the bad kind, increases your HDL. And so actually, even though your total cholesterol may go up, which is all your doctor's looking at, your blood lipids, you know, when you look under the hood, are improving, and you have less risk for heart disease. So we're not even measuring cholesterol in the modern way. These tests, which are called the particle tests, they look at the particle numbers, the total number of particles of cholesterol that you have. They look at whether they're the big, fluffy, harmless kind, or if they're the nasty little, small, inflamed kind. That's the modern test, and not enough doctors are even using that test. So they're treating based on a number that's obsolete.
Right. So the problem is, it seems to me that when you go to your doctor and you get your blood work up, that is the kind of tests they do on you, the HDL, the LDL. They don't go deeper and
that's right.
And make more distinctions, right?
That's right. And, you know, one of the things I will give Dr. Oz tremendous credit for this, because, you know, he got a lot of pushback when he had us on the show as well, but he did say right before we left that if, and particularly for women, and I know we want to address that specifically for this audience, he said if your doctor is just looking at that cholesterol test, the standard cholesterol test, and he wants to put you on a statin, push back a little bit and at least ask for the modern test. At least look under the hood and look for the particle test and find out the real numbers that make a difference before you just blindly follow the prescription of taking a statin drug. You know, one of the the collective myths of cholesterol, as we were talking about earlier, is that because they may be modestly beneficial in the population of middle-aged men with existing cardiovascular disease, well, let's just expand that. Let's give them to women. Let's give them to the elderly. Let's give them to children. Well, this is a very unfortunate way of thinking, because there has never been a study to show that they are particularly effective in women. There's quite a lot of evidence showing that higher cholesterol numbers are associated with more longevity, and in older people, higher cholesterol may actually be protective, and God knows there's zero evidence that they're helpful in children, and there's a lot of reason to suspect that they could be very dangerous in children. So, you know, for all of these reasons, we need to re-examine this crazy obsession with cholesterol, this incredibly important molecule, which is the parent molecule for your sex hormones, the parent molecule for vitamin D. It's needed in the brain for thinking, for memory. It's needed for the immune system. And there are enormous consequences to haphazardly lowering cholesterol in the general population, when in fact the benefits of that in most populations have not been shown.
So can I just ask you right now, before I forget, what test should people be asking their doctors to do, and will the doctors do it?
Well, I can answer the first. I can't answer the second, because some doctors will do it and some won't, and some aren't. If it's not covered by insurance, a lot of people won't, you know, spend the extra money to have it done, or it kind of depends on your insurance plan. But the test that they should ask for is the more modern cholesterol test known as the particle test. There's at least four different labs that give that. It's very common. It's been around a long time. There's studies on it in the literature. And that's what they should be asking for. But not just that. We should also be looking more seriously at triglycerides, which are probably a much more important risk factor than cholesterol ever was. We should be looking at measures of inflammation. As we talk about in the great cholesterol myth, the real promoters of heart disease are not cholesterol, they're inflammation, oxidative damage, stress, sugar in the diet. These are the real promoters of heart disease. Cholesterol is a kind of innocent bystander. It plays a role, but it's a very, very minor role compared to the things that we're ignoring, such as inflammatory foods, toxins in our body, in the air and in the food supply, all of which, you know, compromise cellular function. So there's so many things that we could be doing, and because we're putting all our capital into cholesterol reduction, we're ignoring all these things, and we're really missing the boat when it comes to our health.
So we are totally off track by having the focus on cholesterol and
yes.
Really missing the true causes that are compromising our cardiovascular health, which is the health
Correct.
Of the arteries. Not just
Correct.
When we think of the heart, but it's really the arteries that are the problem, and not really solving a problem because we're not even addressing the causes appropriately.
That's exactly right. Now, you know, we have been accused among the many attacks that have been levied against those of us who question this is, you know, the standard argument that we're anti-statin drugs. We're really not anti-statin drugs. We're anti-over-prescription of statin drugs. As I mentioned earlier, the brain desperately needs saturated fat and cholesterol. A child's brain, and this is not controversial, this isn't any textbook, this is not a debated fact, the frontal cortex of the brain is not doesn't really come online till you're 25. So it's still growing. So the idea of lowering this molecule, which is absolutely vital for brain development, lowering this in the brains of children whose brains aren't even finished growing yet, this is the next thalidomide waiting to happen. So, you know, we really have to pull back on this wholesale notion that statins are just this wonderful, benign drug that we should give to everybody because they have lots of side effects. And sure, you take a chance with side effects if you know the benefit is going to be tremendous, but in populations where there's really been no benefit shown, why take these chances and incur all of these side effects with no real payoff?
Yeah. Yeah. So we need to get the more modern test, and let's mm-hmm. talk about triglycerides. Can we
sure.
can we elaborate on that so people understand what that
yeah.
is really indicating and
sure.
What
triglycerides are 95% of the fat in the world, whether it's in your diet, whether it's, you know, in the food that you eat or if it's stored on your body, 95% of the fat that we know and love or hate, as the case may be, is in the form of something called triglycerides. And you can measure triglycerides in the bloodstream, and every basic blood test does, in fact, give you a triglyceride level. Well, high triglycerides are a risk factor for heart disease. And triglycerides go up with high-carb diets. And if you want to drop your triglycerides, they haven't even found a drug that can do this as well. If you want to drop your triglycerides like a rock, you go on a lower carbohydrate diet. They drop like a rock every single time because the liver makes triglycerides partly at the impetus of sugar in the diet. So there's also a very, if anybody has their blood test in front of them right now and they want to find a metric that is really, really very predictive of future problems or absence thereof, you look at two numbers, triglycerides and HDL cholesterol, and you figure out your ratio. Very easy to do. I know a lot of people glaze over when they hear about math, but this is really easy. If triglycerides are 100 and HDL is 50, the ratio is 2. 100 to 50 is a 2-to-1 ratio. It's a ratio of 2. If triglycerides are 150 and HDL is 30, it's a ratio of 5, right? 30 goes into
right.
155 times, so
right.
it's 5, the triglycerides are 5 times more than the HDL, that's a ratio of 5. Well, if you have a ratio of 2 or under, you ain't having a heart attack. It's just that simple. I mean, you can just take that to the bank. It's just not associated with much risk. When that ratio starts climbing 5 and higher, risk goes significantly up, and not just for heart disease, but for all the things that lead up to it, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, diabetes. The risk goes hugely up when triglycerides to HDL ratio goes up. Now, you may not be able to move your HDL. There's a lot of debate about as you can raise your HDL, but it's not all that easy to do. But you can drop your triglycerides like in a day. So consider that even if your HDL stayed where it was, if you could drop your triglycerides, that ratio, that important ratio, would also drop. Like, let's say your HDL is 30 and you can't move it, but your triglycerides are 150. Well, your ratio is now 5, 30, you know, 150 to 30. It's very high and it's very risky. But if you dropped your triglycerides to 90, you just dropped your ratio to 3. From 5, without touching your HDL. So lowering triglycerides is so important, and in my opinion, so much more important than lowering cholesterol. And again, it can be done easily by simply eating less carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we go back to really what ultimately, well, you know what, I'm just noticing the time. I think before we continue this really fascinating conversation, I need to take a little break.
Okay.
A station break, and then we can go back and just continue on, because I know you've got so much to share. So why don't we do that right now?
We'll
take a little break. No one go away. Dr. Johnny Bowden has great things to share with us, and you've been listening to What Women Must Know, and we will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Sumlin. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we are talking to Dr. Johnny Bowden, who is the author of a fantastic book called The Great Cholesterol Myth. And I just have to tell you, Johnny, I really enjoyed reading your book because it was so much fun.
Thank you.
So much fun and so easy to read and so understandable. So kudos to you for that, because it's not easy.
Well, thank you so much. It's so sweet of you to say.
You're welcome. It's true. So anyway, let's talk about the real culprits and what has gotten us into this pickle, which goes all the way back to the introduction of all the carbs and sugar in our diet and the bad fats. And, you know, so why don't we just talk about some of those root cause issues that have generated this epidemic, and the epidemic of all the other chronic illnesses we're experiencing as well, for that matter.
Well, you know, it really keeps, I hate to be a one-trick pony here and continue to sound the same message, but time and time again, when we look at brain disorders, when we look at cardiovascular disorders, when we look at diabetes, when we look at almost every chronic disease we know of that we're trying to prevent, they seem to have expanded. The incidence of these diseases continues to rise, and it seems to track very well with the introduction of modern processed foods. There's really no way around this. I mean, in the early part of the 20th century, when we were still eating lard and saturated fat and animal products, and all of those animal products weren't contaminated with toxins and bovine growth hormone and antibiotics and steroids and all the other stuff that we put into meat now, and people were eating an actual real food diet with plenty of fat, heart disease was almost unknown. They didn't even have a profession called cardiology till the mid part of the 20th century, early part of the 20th century. So when you look for a template for the human diet, it always seems to me that we should look at these facts and figures. The human genus, our predecessors, pre-Homo sapiens, before Homo sapiens, the whole human genus has been on the planet about 2.5 million years. McDonald's has been here since 1957. I mean, where should we get the template from? You know, the food that has sustained the human genus Homo sapiens for 100,000 years or so, or what we've been eating in the last century? Agriculture wasn't even invented before 10,000 years ago, which seems like a long time, but it's not even a minute on the 24-hour human time clock. So it seems to me that a return to the foods that we could have, I call them the Johnny Bowden four food groups, the foods we could have hunted, fished, gathered, or plucked, the more we can make that the center of our diet, the less food that has unpronounceable ingredients, comes in packages, has a long shelf life. This is not the stuff that is what was meant to sustain this human body that we all know and love, and the one that we were assigned at birth and that we have till the day we die. And if you want to take care of that, you've really got to give it what I call factory specified fuel, the fuel that we were really meant to run most effectively on. And, you know, I as I say to my weight loss, in my weight loss seminars, you know, you can store about 1,800 calories in the human body of carbohydrate as something called glycogen, but you can store about 64 gazillion calories of fat. Fat is the natural fuel for the human body. It produces more energy, it gives you more endurance, it gives you a better sense of well-being, it's more important for the brain. So really, this move away from fat and towards something that really is pretty recent in the human diet, agricultural products, grains, starches, all of the stuff that we basically live on, that the idiotic American Dietetic Association tells us to eat 60 or 70% of in our diet, this stuff is fairly recent, and it is very much tracking with just about every disease that we know of.
Yep. And,
you know, so one of the things we talk about in the Great Cholesterol Myth is that that was never the enemy. It was always sugar. And there was actually, even when in the United States basically adopted this kind of policy of, you know, anti-cholesterol, anti-saturated fat, more carbohydrates, more complex carbohydrates, all of that nonsense, really, in the 80s when that was accepted, there was quite a lot of debate about this. And there was a second point of view. There were really two points of view. One was that, yes, saturated fat and cholesterol cholesterol. But the other point of view was that it was sugar. And I often use the example for people who are old enough to remember it, that, you know, it, when VHS, when home recording first came out, and I'm really dating myself here because we don't even have VHS machines anymore, but those who may remember when we first had home recording machines to watch television, there were really two technologies. There was Betamax and there was VHS.
Yeah.
And if you talk to any recording engineer in America, they will tell you the Betamax was the better technology. They still use Betamax in recording studios. It was a far superior technology. So why did we go with VHS? Because they had a better ground game. They signed up more manufacturers. They got more movie studios to agree to put their films on VHS, and eventually they won the battle of, you know, of public opinion, and we all went with VHS, but it was a sucky technology. And the same thing happened here. We had a very distinguished professor of medicine in England, John Yutkin, who was arguing that this was this stuff about fat and cholesterol was nonsense. It was sugar that was the main problem in the modern diet, and that was what was tracking with all of these diseases. And then we had Ansel Keys in America arguing, nope, it's saturated fat and cholesterol. And you had this sort of battle, the same way we had the VHS and Betamax thing. And Ansel Keys and his saturated fat is the spawn of Satan theory won. But it was the wrong theory. The wrong technology won. And we've been on the wrong path ever since. And hopefully now we're finally beginning to get back to understanding that Yutkin was right all along. It's sugar and processed carbohydrates that are causing the problem. It never was fat. We were wrong. We've been on the wrong path for the last 40 years. It's time to get off that train and to start doing something about the real demons in the diet. And that basically, in my opinion, is sugar, processed carbohydrates, starches, and grains.
And, you know, it's such an ingrained myth because even when you're shopping, and, you know, I was in Whole Foods the other day, and everything is low fat. You want to get yogurt, it's all zero fat, low fat. That's part of that myth that has been institutionalized, isn't it?
It's exactly part. I have never recommended a no-fat food in my life, and I never will. I'm not even a fan of low-fat foods, although I can see that once in a great while somebody wants to save some calories, maybe. But we need healthy, full-fat foods, and we need to stop being afraid of them. They do many wonderful things for the body. You know, I know when I go on these shows, I'm supposed to be promoting my book and talking about it, but I want people to really get the information that needs to be out there. So if I'm going to tell you about some other books that I also think you should read beside mine, and one of them is the magnificent New York Times bestseller, Grain Brain, by the integrative neurologist David Perlmutter.
Yes.
And Perlmutter, who's pretty darn hard to argue with, because if you read his credentials, it's pretty staggering, makes a very strong case that we absolutely need saturated fat and cholesterol for the brain. He believes that the absence of these things are contributing to all of the neurological problems that they're seeing in his clinic, from Parkinson's disease to Alzheimer's to Lou Gehrig's disease. You know, it's very interesting that one of the accepted treatments for epilepsy, for childhood epilepsy, is a high-fat diet. So clearly, high-fat diets have a tremendous amount of value to the brain. That's the point that he makes in Grain Brain. So I urge people to read that book. I urge people to read Wheat Belly by my friend, the cardiologist William Davis. And you will see that we are all saying very much the same thing.
Yeah. So I think the point has really been made by you and other guests I've had that the nemesis, our real nemesis, is sugar, carbs, mm-hmm. carbohydrates, the refined carbohydrates, even wheat in any form is part of that nemesis category. And the more we go back to mm-hmm. healthy eating, your lean proteins, or maybe you like the fattier cuts of meat, but anyway, proteins, healthy oils like the coconut oil, like the olive oil, you'd probably be in favor of butter, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, your vegetables, and just go back to really healthy eating. If you cut out the sugars and the carbs and the candy and the sodas on the processed foods, you would see remarkable changes in your health, and it would show up as in your blood workup.
Absolutely agree.
Now, we are a nutrient depleted culture. Our soils are depleted. Our foods are depleted. So there's certain supplementation that you recommend that would play a major role in helping to heal, repair, and rejuvenate our arteries.
Well, I'm a big believer in supplements. I take them every day. I've varied, you know, from there was a time back in the 90s when I took almost 100 things a day. 50 was not unusual. I still alternate a lot of things depending on, you know, if I think my liver needs a little bit of extra support, I may go one direction. If I'm, you know, feeling a little brain foggy, I may stack up on the brain nutrients a little bit. I've got a basic 7 or 8 supplements that I almost never miss on a day-to-day basis. And while I'm a big believer in individuality, metabolic individuality, biochemical individuality, so I don't like to recommend, you know, the same things for everybody because everybody's different and everybody has different nutritional deficiencies or, you know, stress eats up certain vitamins. And so, it, you know, depends on stage of life and level of stress and how much toxins you're exposed to. But that said, I think there's a handful of supplements that just about everybody would benefit from, and those are certainly the ones that I take on a daily basis, and I'd be happy to talk about those and why I take them.
Let's do that.
Well, let's start with inflammation, because in my opinion, you can't scratch a, you know, I'm trying to find the metaphor where they say you can't swing a rope without hitting something. You can't really swing a rope and touch a disease without coming face to face with inflammation. It is a part of just about every degenerative, chronic disease that we know of. When they do autopsies on the brains of Alzheimer's patients, they say inflammation. There's inflammation in cancer, inflammation, tons of inflammation in obesity and diabetes and metabolic syndrome, in all the brain disorders. So we really are walking around with a tremendous amount of inflammation, and I think we should spend a minute explaining to people what that means. Most folks are familiar with inflammation, with a kind of inflammation called acute inflammation. That's when you get a splinter and the area gets all red and swollen, and or you get an abscess in your tooth, or you have an eruption on your skin, or you ache, an aching back, or a sprained ankle or a knee. That's acute inflammation. It hurts. As my friend Barry Sears says, acute inflammation hurts. But chronic inflammation kills, and chronic inflammation is the stuff we're talking about. Chronic inflammation flies beneath the pain radar. You don't see it. It doesn't have a symptom, much like high blood pressure. You don't know you've got it. It doesn't hurt, but it is doing systemic damage. It damages your arteries. It damages your vascular system. It damages your brain. It damages your organs. And probably one of the best dietary strategies we could undertake, one of the most productive things we could do for our health, is to eat an anti-inflammatory diet. So where do we start with that? Well, the most anti-inflammatory molecule I know of is omega-3. So I recommend fish oil to just about everyone. I don't know of anyone who would not benefit from fish oil. It's extremely anti-inflammatory. Studies are very clear. It lowers triglycerides. It lowers blood pressure. It helps with circulation. It helps with the brain, with mood, with skin, hair, nails, the things we care about like vanity things. So there's just no downside to taking omega-3s, in my opinion. That's the top of my list.
And how much? What would you suggest?
Minimum a gram a day of EPA and DHA. And remember, you dose on the EPA, DHA, not on the total amount of fish oil. If you go to some of these big box stores and 1,200 milligrams of fish oil, who cares? What you want to know, look on that box and see if it says EPA, DHA, how much of that, and that's what you're really looking for.
Right. Okay, good point.
So I would say at least a gram. I do 2 to 3 grams a day. You know, there's also a wonderful blood test you can get now from Vital Choice, which I have a link on my website to Vital Choice. It's a wonderful company in Alaska where I get all my salmon from. They actually have a blood test that you can do at home to see what your omega-3 levels are. And I recommend that to people as an educational thing, just to kind of know where you are, because higher levels of omega-3s are always good things. Now,
I want to say I have this test sitting in front of me, which I have to do, but
really?
I think it's a really important test. I don't think it's just a test to, you know, out of curiosity. I think it's a vital test, because if you are low in omega-3s, if you're deficient in omega-3s, you're at risk for so many health issues.
One of the reasons that some companies, like I work closely with Barleen's Essential Oils, a wonderful company that makes, you know, also makes fish oil. There's a number of companies like this Ocean Blue, which is available at CVS and Walmart and Walgreens and all of those stores, and has a very, very high quality fish oil. But Barleen's had a kit like that for a while also, and these companies get a lot of pushback because the FDA says you're diagnosing, you can't, you know, so they have to be sold as educational tools, because, you know, God forbid, you know, we should take our health into our own hands and actually think that this stuff matters. You know, they don't want that. So we you know, when I believe Vital Choice is one of the only ones that now has that test available, but they're very clear about it being used for educational purposes only. So we have
well,
to
we are.
Right, exactly.
So fish oil, what else?
You know, well, magnesium. Magnesium is virtually every survey, starting with that Gallup poll they did, I don't know, a couple decades ago, has shown that about 75% of the population doesn't even get the paltry, pathetic amount of the RDA for magnesium, which is like 400 milligrams a day. So magnesium is involved in about 300 different biochemical reactions. Most importantly for this audience, it helps lower blood sugar and it helps open up the arteries so that you have a kind of relaxation effect, not only on the brain, but basically on the arteries. So instead of constricting them and increasing blood pressure, it actually dilates them and opens them up a little bit. So magnesium, very important for blood sugar, very important for cardiovascular health. Vitamin D. Resveratrol. Tremendous antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. Curcumin, love curcumin, particularly the BCM95 form of curcumin, which is the one of the more absorbable kinds. It's you know, they've been clinically studied for a long time. The brand that you can get off, I think, on the counter, the off-the-counter one is Terry Naturally. That's a very good kind that uses BCM95 curcumin. So resveratrol, curcumin, vitamin D, magnesium, omega-3s, vitamin K. Extremely good for the heart and for the bones, I might add. And coenzyme Q10. I mean, that's, and probiotics. Those are kind of my go-to basic supplements for day-to-day life.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that it's really important to remind everyone that we really cannot get the nutrition we need to keep up with the toxic world and the stress that's going on with just diet. As good as the diet is, and I always like to tell people, it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb and assimilate, and we're really shockingly bad at absorbing and assimilating nutrition.
Exactly, and it's another reason, by the way, why I think probiotics are so important, because that helps heal the gut and make the gut a more receptive place for the absorption and utilization of these nutrients. If they're not getting, as you say, if you're not being absorbed properly, if the gut is damaged in some way and the ecology of the gut isn't optimal, you're not going to absorb all the nutrients that you're taking.
Yeah, so I just encourage people to really get a protocol together, a little program, because we need it. You can't really thrive. You might be able to survive, but you cannot thrive without additional supplementation.
I agree with that.
And, you know, we've got about 5 minutes left, so can we quickly talk about the testing that you think is the most relevant for people?
Well, again, I urge people, it's not a whole difficult protocol that you've got to, we talk about, Steve mentions a number of tests in The Great Cholesterol Myth that he thinks are very, very important to get, you know, for some people, serum ferritin, lipoprotein little a is very predictive of heart disease, that's a particular kind of cholesterol molecule. But my I think the take home, the 15-second elevator speech for your listeners and for most listeners is switch from the basic cholesterol test, which is useless and out of date, and go to the more modern particle test, because that's going to give you a ton more information that actually is usable, really give you a sense of your risk. And the other thing is pay attention to that ratio, triglycerides to HDL. It is very, very telling and very predictive of a lot of things. There's a simple thing you can do at home, measure your waist, because that will tell you a great deal as well. You know, we don't have time to go into what insulin resistance is, but it's at the heart of most metabolic diseases, including diabetes and obesity, and it's a big part of heart disease as well. Well, there's a test for insulin resistance, and you can do it at home right now. Stand in front of a wall. Walk towards the wall. If your belly hits the wall before your nose does, guess what? That's probably insulin resistant. If you're a woman and your waist is 35 inches or over, and you're a man and your waist is 40 inches or over, very good chance of insulin resistance.
Right.
And insulin resistance is nothing more than a disease of carbohydrate metabolism. Can be corrected or reduced enormously with a low carbohydrate diet in about 72 hours,
which isn't long at all. That's phenomenal.
Not at all.
You know,
yeah.
72 hours, you can shift things around by making those changes.
Some people say even less, but I mean certainly by then you can make a big difference in insulin resistance. And for those of you who don't know what that is, I urge you to read about it or check it out or look online, because it's a big factor in a lot of these diseases.
So just cut down those carbs, get some good omegas, get some good magnesium.
Stop fearing fat.
Yep, yep. Put the good, healthy fats in. And read the book.
I know we only have a minute, but I do want to make one quick plea for non-dietary and exercise interventions, because we all know, I hope we all know how important diet, supplementation, exercise is, but, you know, in heart health and in health in general, our relationships are, I don't want to get too airy-fairy with spirituality, but just what we think about, our thoughts, what we put our attention on, our joy, our gratitude, our commitment to others, these things have profound effects on your cardiovascular system, folks. They really, really do. What you think about really affects your immune system. It affects your, there's a whole field called psychoneuroimmunology that just talks about what you think about affects your immune system. So, you know, don't discard all of the lifestyle things that have nothing to do with diet and exercise. Don't, of course, ignore diet and exercise, but remember that how you treat people, how much time you spend with animals, if you're outside, if you take a walk in the green, if you volunteer at a shelter, these things really do have a profound effect on health.
We have to remember it's really a holistic journey. The physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual components all matter.
They do.
So, Johnny, this has been so wonderful. Let's give your website to my listeners.
It's johnnyboden.com. It's going to have a complete revamping in the next couple of months, but it's JONNYBOWDEN, Johnny Bowden, O-H and Johnny, and you can follow me on Twitter at Johnny Bowden.
And your book, which is The Great Cholesterol Myth, which I highly recommend people read. They'll find it really easy to get the essence and an enjoyable read. I just have
thank
to tell
you so much.
You
and we have a
again.
Cookbook, follow-up cookbook called The Great Cholesterol Myth Cookbook that actually has the first 50 pages or so, a great summary of The Great Cholesterol Myth, and then we have all these wonderful recipes that have things that you think you're not supposed to eat, but you can eat with impunity, and they're wonderful. And
great. life is good again.
Yes.
Well, Johnny, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us today. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, Shelley. I appreciate it.
Okay, and
bye-bye.
Bye for now. And to all of you listening, thank you for another opportunity to share such great information. I want to remind everyone to check out whatwomenmustknow.com and to always remember that you really must honor the wisdom of your feminine self. It really will guide you to everything you need to know, do, and be. So until next time, have a wonderful week. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.